favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Keep the slate in there. Just be like, to buffer it. That's good. You go. Perfect. Yeah.
All right, guys. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode and season 6 of the Horrible Pupils podcast. Yeah. I am your host, Alex Webster. Joining me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
What's up?
And Phil Acevedo.
Hello. Hello. Hi. Mm-hmm.
If you can see us, that means it worked.
Yeah, we are actually living inside your screens right now.
We are very excited to kick off season 6 with something incredible, which is, of course, video.
We've made it to the 21st century, guys! Yeah!
Apparently, it's the thing that killed the rock star.
The radio star. Rockstars are still alive.
I don't know.
No, heroin and black tar heroin killed the rockstar.
Yeah. The radio star. Radio star.
Yeah.
That was just video.
Not unlike what the rest of this episode is going to be.
Did we pick one of the darkest ones to introduce ourselves to the world?
That's how we do it, baby. Hey. That's how we do it.
And then if you're listening online, you know, just pretend that you're seeing us.
Yeah.
Let your imagination run wild.
We're all beautiful.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, let's go ahead and kick it off. We are talking about Poltergeist from 1982, year of 1982.
1 year before Thriller, baby.
Mm. World was different. It's the movie that's got the intro, our intro.
You know what's so funny is I did write that into the outline, you fuck.
Oh, wow, dude. I have not read the outline, by the way. I have not.
Phil's still shooting himself in the foot live on TV now. Oh, hey. Yeah.
Beautiful. So I'm going to go ahead and kick us off with IMDb's synopsis, which is really quite simple. Quote, a family's home is haunted by a host of demonic ghosts.
Mm.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay. What would you rate that IMDb synopsis? I'm giving it a 4.
Yeah, I was going to say 5, but yeah, I think I'm going to go 4 also.
They could have had like better grouping names.
We got some alliteration. Home is haunted by a host.
Oh, wow. I didn't think that.
Host and ghost rhyme. So it's just, it's not a good sentence.
No. A cavalcade of demonic ghosts.
A cavalcade.
A murder of demonic ghosts.
I would have just gone with real estate, just moved the headstones. Boom.
This movie was directed by Tobe Hooper, who you might know from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm. Supposedly directed.
Okay, there's so much about this.
Yeah.
The screenplay is by someone you might know. His name is Steven Spielberg.
Oh, shit. Is that the guy that did Star Wars?
I think he did The Godfather. Godfather?
George Lucas does get a cameo in this story.
Oh, of course.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I didn't know that either. Hey, all right. Okay.
Michael Grace, I'm sorry. And Mark Victor is for the screenplay. The story is also by the one, the only, Steven Spielberg.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it was produced by Frank Marshall and Steven Spielberg.
Damn. Yeah. Mr. Marshall. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Our cavalcade of characters.
Hey.
We have Craig T. Nelson.
Over here. Oh, Mr. Incredible. Yeah.
Mr. Incredible.
Jo Beth Williams.
Person. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Dominique Dunn. Oliver Robbins and Heather O'Rourke.
Damn,
that's the little girl.
Yes,
yeah, Heather O'Rourke.
Yes, Heather O'Rourke's the little girl.
Nice, nice.
This movie released on June 4th, 1982. It had a budget of $10.7 million, and it had a box office earnings of $121.7 million.
Damn, that's an '80s ass hit right there.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
That's
all
hefty.
Right.
That's a hefty all box right. office right there.
Well. Tiny ass budget. Really, this actually looks like a really good fucking movie. So
yes, let's talk about it.
Let's see. So, and of course, if you're seeing us for the first time on video, hello TV. We usually talk about how these movies are made, and normally they're not this dark. I'm sure, but what the hell?
It's
right?
So sad. Yeah, I had to take a break writing it.
Oh shit! All right, we're not taking a break. We're coming right to you. All right. So, as Spielberg was contractually unable to direct another film while he made E.T. the Extraterrestrial. That's right. Yeah. Toby Hooper was selected based on his work on, of course, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Funhouse, which I've not seen the latter, actually.
Yeah. I have not either.
Neither have I. I've never seen it. No.
Okay, well, we just tossed our horror cred right out there in the first fucking episode. So, Spielberg conceived Poltergeist as a horror sequel to his 1977 film Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, this is terrifying.
Night Skies. However, Hooper was less interested in the sci-fi elements and suggested they collaborate on a ghost story. Ooh. Yeah.
Sounds like a dick measuring contest to me, Cotton.
Yeah. Oh, you can't direct the movie? Well, I think we should fucking do this. So, allegedly, Spielberg and Hooper wanted virtually unknown actors to play the Freelings because they wanted to add realism to the family that would off-balance, of course, the ghost story. They felt that if the audience watched well-known stars, then it would take away from the realistic feel of the characters. Or they couldn't bag any big names for their production.
I'm, again, thinking it's the latter.
Yeah.
That might be the case, yeah.
God, Pacino will never work for that.
Can you imagine Pacino's a little girl? Hoo-ah, they're here.
They're here.
It's like a Gina, right? Gina, turn off the TV. You gotta turn off the TV, man. They're fucking here, man.
Sit on the floor, man.
De Niro is the dad. Hey, you only removed the headstones, but you left the bodies in the cemetery. What the fuck?
What the fuck?
Why'd you do that?
This is King of Comedy.
I did miss that part where Heather O'Rourke just buried her face into a mountain of cocaine.
You imagine it's Spielberg's cocaine, too. He's like, okay, Heather, so this is what you gotta do, okay? So there's like some monsters in the fucking TV, all right?
We got this from the John Landis set, by the way.
Oh, come on, dude. Jesus Christ, dude. It's season premiere, dude. It's season six, baby. Wow. Come on.
Wow. Oh, man, what are you showing me there? Come on.
Drew Barrymore was considered for the role of Carol Ann, but producer Steven Spielberg wanted someone more angelic than fucking Drew Barrymore. They couldn't pay for it.
Oh, come on.
Barrymore's audition for this role, however, that landed her the part of Gertie in E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Hey, okay, alright.
Dude, she rules in E.T., man.
She does.
Yeah. To this day, I recently watched E.T., and I was like, God damn it, Drew, what the fuck, dude? Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually really...
You're just driving home. I didn't know Drew Barrymore was even in E.T. until I wrote this, because I've never seen it.
Oh, you've never seen E.T.?
Oh,
dude.
Shit.
Oh, man, we gotta change that.
We gotta show that. And...
Dude, there was a screening for it not too long ago, about a year ago, Savannah and I went, and I think it was like for the 40th anniversary?
Oh, 30th. Jesus fucking Christ.
I mean, it would have been 40th. Last year if it was for the 40th
anniversary. And man, to this day, that John Williams score, I'm like, fuck, dude. Like,
oh, when they played it at his
it's still
concert?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, my heart.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Anyway, so Heather O'Rourke was chosen for the film when she was eating lunch with her mama and sister at the MGM commissary. Okay, cool.
Sure.
That sounds prison-y. Producer Steven Spielberg came up to them and wanted O'Rourke for the part of Carol Ann.
I was like, what?
We can cut that one. She initially failed the screen test because, of course, she kept laughing right through the audition. The line came back. Even when she was supposed to be afraid. Spielberg thought she was too young to take the part seriously, but he still recognized something special in her. So he asked her to come back for another audition, and this time bring a scary storybook with her. He also asked her to scream. So she screamed and screamed until she started crying. Damn.
Way to go, Spielberg.
This audition got her cast as Carol Ann. The 80s were a different time, people.
Yeah.
They were a different time.
Yeah.
Oy. Well, of course, during all the horrors that proceeded while filming Poltergeist, only one scene really scared Heather O'Rourke. That in which she had to hold on to the headboard while a wind machine blew toys into the closet behind her.
That is scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say so.
The young actress understandably broke down, and Spielberg stopped everything, took her in his arms, and said that she would not have to do the scene again.
Mm.
Papa Spielberg!
Yeah, that's something we talk about in our Twilight Zone episode. Spielberg famously, like, was very fond of children.
Yes.
And was very protective of his child actors.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
You can tell in a his craft, too. The dude, like, I mean, when I think of child actors and directors working with child actors, I think of Spielberg. The dude, the dude kind of rules at it. Mm-hmm. He's really good. I mean, because, like, the guy's always had, like, this inner child. He's always been, like, this little 40-something-year-old dude. Like, I'd see footage of him, like, on the set of E.T., and he's like, oh, wow, he's literally talking to them like he's kind of like a kid, but he's also trying to, like, he treats them like adults at the same time, which is weird.
Yeah, but
it's different. Yeah. Not weird in a weird way, but, like, he's got this weird mechanism where he can communicate with kids really well.
No, no, that's true. Him and, like, Chris Columbus.
Yeah, Chris Columbus is also another guy,
really
too.
Good, Eddie. Yeah, very, very good.
There was a behind-the-scenes thing where it showed Chris Columbus, like, directing the kids on Harry Potter, and I was just like, that looked dope. That looked like it would just been a great place to hang out for the day. Yeah.
But total menace to the craft services people. He's like, you call us a fucking bagel?
That mean to baristas, nice to children.
Yeah, that's right. Hollywood, baby. Anyways, so... speaking of scares, the terrors that plague Robbie came from Steven Spielberg's own fears as a child. A fear of clowns and a tree outside his window. Damn.
Those are 5-year-old fears. I mean, to be fair, I am still scared of clowns and I'm 28, so.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And.
Get over it, Webster.
Trees be scary sometimes.
Fuck you, dude.
Nah, clowns kind of suck.
You seen a clown lately?
Yeah,
they're scary as hell.
Yeah, clowns are kind of weird.
I think they know they're scary, so they're playing it up.
I did look up the poster for the Funhouse, and there is a clown on the cover, and it is fucking terrifying.
That's why you fucking hired him. I see it.
Do you see this shit?
Yeah, it looks dumb.
Not with it.
So while filming, the producers weren't exactly putting out good vibes into the film. Most notably, real human skeletons were used in the swimming pool scene, since the crew decided it would be too complicated and expensive to get fake ones. Laziness?
I want to know, in what world is it more expensive to get fake skeletons than to get real ones?
In the world of 1982, before Thriller.
That's so weird.
They repurposed them for Thriller.
Right?
That's exactly
and
it.
What's crazy is they didn't tell Jo Beth Williams, who plays the mom in that scene, that they were real human skeletons until after she had recorded it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of weird.
That's a little
NGL. That's kind of weird.
That's a little gross. Not my jam.
But then again,
We want informed consent when people are swimming with bodies.
It's like, and by the way, one of them, we excavated your uncle.
I was about to make a really off-color joke.
We cut to us. We just cut to us and reacting to it.
There you go.
Anyways. So, originally, as Toby Hooper, Steven Spielberg, and the screenwriters were plotting out the screenplay, Carol Ann was going to be killed in the first act and then haunt the house in the second. Damn. They eventually decided this was too dark and opted to have her kidnapped by the ghosts. Okay, all right. And all in fact, eventually, so many of the dark elements were removed because Spielberg wanted a PG rating so that the film could run as a double feature in theaters with the concurrently released E.T. the Extraterrestrial. So much so that there was only one death, Tweety the Bird, in the final movie, and only a couple of injuries.
Yeah.
Damn.
It still blows my mind that this movie is PG.
It's haunting.
There's a scene where, like, the dude's ripping his face off, right?
Yeah.
Yes! I was about to mention that scene also specifically where he just, like, is ripping off his own face. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's so weird because it's clearly, like, grocery store meat. Like, it's clearly just, like, he's just tossed. I'm just like, I see my grandma do that.
Yeah.
Poltergeist initially received an R rating from our friends at the MPAA.
Fuck you, MPAA!
The first time here, we notoriously have talked some shit on the MPAA, but Steven Spielberg and Toby Hooper disagreed with the R rating and succeeded in having it changed to a PG on appeal. That's what you call the Spielberg privilege right there.
Mr. Spielberg, yes.
Don't you want to make money on this one? Okay, actually, gotcha. We don't know. The meat's fine.
Yes, of course.
The meat's fine.
We'll give it a G rating. It's fine.
No, okay, G's too much. You want some edge?
Spielberg was like, look, in 10 years, I'm going to give you Schindler's List and do whatever you want with that, all right?
It's going to be a fucking R. So as the film set off to silver screens across America, one controversy asked the question, what?
Ask the question, who really directed Poltergeist?
One controversy asked the question?
Yeah, that's kind of... I'll read it for you folks right here. As the film set off to silver screens across America, one controversy asked the question, who really directed Poltergeist?
Right, that's a good read. That's,
exactly.
Grammatically didn't make sense for you. It's fine.
One controversy was asking this question.
Oh, we're personifying the controversy.
Yeah, the controversy itself is personified, my guy.
All right, well.
7 years.
I'll buy it.
Yeah, I just joined and I kind of want to get the fuck out.
I had my Ron Burgundy moment right there, for sure. All right, well, you're back on it, Phil. You're back on
it. Okay, well, you know what? I might as well continue, keep going, and yeah, let's do it. So, Poltergeist Cursed PTI. Poltergeist Cursed PTI. See, and then it rubs off of you onto me. So I'm going to blame you on this one, okay? Because every once in a while, I do mess up. But it's a very rare thing, to be honest.
You might as well said Poltergeist Cursed UTI. You may as well have said that.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe I actually
Terror
read PTI.
Infected the
it's site. Like, it's not, it's, Poltergeist the movie doesn't have a UTI, dude. Poltergeist Cursed.
Cranberry juice.
Poltergeist Cursed PYT.
PYT.
I want to love you.
Poltergeist Curse Part 1.
Hey, Dan.
God.
Oh, this is the wow. We cut it one time. We're fucked. The whole rest of the thing. It was great.
So, a clause in the Universal Studios contract prevented Steven Spielberg from directing another film while preparing E.T. the Extraterrestrial. So you can't really direct two movies at the same time.
It was just the specific clause that was just like, we want your undivided attention on this weird fucking dick-looking alien movie.
It's true.
All right, I guess.
I like the weird, that's a very good descriptor right there.
An uncircumcised one, by the way. Might I add.
Thank you, Phil.
And according to Toby Hooper, the very core concept of the film was an idea he pitched to Spielberg after turning down the offer to direct Night Skies.
Hmm.
And this is where writer Michael Grace, is that how you pronounce it?
Sure.
Michael Grace?
Sorry, Michael Grace.
He stated that, quote, we weren't really working with Spielberg because he was on E.T. and that Spielberg only had sporadic meetings with the writers and MGM's commissary. Commissary.
You can catch me as usual, baby D.
And of course, E.T. and Poltergeist were released a week apart in June 1982.
He did that on purpose.
Yeah, mm-hmm. of course, dude. He's smart.
No, Spielberg,
he's
wink,
smart.
Had nothing wink to do with it, wink. Because
he didn't direct the movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He knew what he was doing, dude. The man knows, he knows. And this is where Time and Newsweek referred to it as, quote, the Spielberg summer.
It's like Hot Girl Summer.
And there were suggestions that Spielberg, in addition to being Poltergeist's co-producer and co-writer, had also served as his de facto co-director.
What?
And he was co-custodian. He co-designed the flyers.
He was co-craft services.
I don't know if this is...
He was in disguise.
I don't know
if this... He had a fucking mustache and, like, a big hat. He's just like, you're a sandwich.
That's funny. I don't know if this is in the script or not. Most likely, it probably is, so I'm not going to say it. Because I do this all the time.
Tell me.
Spielberg, like, was super, like, hands-on, from what I remember. I've seen video essays, like years ago about Poltergeist.
You're about to get to it, baby.
I knew it. I'm notorious for doing that.
There's some stuff that I did have to leave out for time, because this is a lengthy episode.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that it was something that wasn't in the outline, but no. This is the section that you're in is actually exactly that sentiment.
Well, luckily for us, I am a lengthy man. So in this view was this view was bolstered by various statements Spielberg made about his involvement, including a Los Angeles Times quote on May 24th, 1982. This is the quote. Toby isn't a take-charge sort of guy. If a question was asked and an answer wasn't immediately forthcoming, I'd jump in and say what we could do. Toby would not agreement, and that became the process of collaboration, baby. He didn't say baby at the end. That was me.
No, yeah, that was...
But yeah, but that's a cool quote. And yeah, I can see it happen, because, like, dude, two different directors.
Yeah.
But... if you want, I've seen this movie so many times, it feels more Spielberg than Hooper.
It feels super Spielberg.
It's Spielberg horror film.
But I see the Hooperness. I'm gonna throw that word in there right now.
Hooperness. You know,
the hoopla.
Okay. As the person in the group project who always was just like, is no one gonna take charge? Okay, fine, I'll get this the fucking A.
Yeah, Spielberg has that energy for sure. Yeah. I feel like Toby would be like, I don't know. That seems like a lot of work. Spielberg's like, we can do it. We can do it, right? We can fucking do it.
I'm fucking Steven Spielberg, bitch.
Be right back. I'm going to go direct this fucking E.T. shit.
Yeah. I mean, well, he did it again with Jurassic Park and Schindler's List, dude.
Simultaneously,
like,
yeah.
Like mm-hmm. a decade later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is insane.
Two very different movies.
Those two movies are
Well, because he added Jurassic Park, he was editor at that point, right?
Yeah, he was editing. Well, he was on a satellite call on the other side of the world with his editors while filming Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of did something similar. The movie Poltergeist. Once Poltergeist wrapped and was like two with editors, that's when he booked it to E.T. and started working on E.T.
That's awesome. That's fucking awesome, dude. I admire that, to be honest, because both of these movies rule, and so does Jurassic Park and Schindler's List.
Yeah, you know, as also someone who does two podcasts, I totally understand.
Look at you. I get it. Look at you.
She does three.
Anthony. Tony Spielbergo.
Esteban Spielbergo, the non-union equivalent.
Oh, yeah. That's good. I understood that reference.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
It's not a Futurama reference, but, no. You know, because I wouldn't understand that one.
Oh, man.
By the way, thanks for crucifying me and the bros. For all you fucking listening, yeah, I've never watched Futurama in my life, and I got crucified.
No, yeah,
we
burned
his
ass.
What he's leaving out is that his girlfriend also crucified
him.
Yeah,
that's probably like the third time she's done that to me. But this time she had an audience with her, and I was like,
yeah,
shit.
And we were all just like, boo this
well,
man.
That and the audience was on her side for sure. So yeah,
in all fairness, I finished season one this week. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, okay.
It's pretty funny.
Until you get your heart broken in the next couple.
It's pretty
seasons.
Funny.
Just keep watching.
I dig it.
Just
I was,
keep watching.
There was moments where I'm like.
What is that poly ass laugh?
I don't know. Let's continue.
No. Hey. Also, to be fair, we were all pretty lit.
Yeah, we were.
At that point.
We were
already pre-talking shit anyways.
Yeah.
I got
thick skin. I can handle when I'm getting crucified for not watching something. But I don't really like to be on the receiving end. But I know what it's like to be in the giving end. Because there's parts where I'm like, yo, what the fuck? You never seen Goodfellas? What? You know, and then I'll be like, I'm not going to mention any names here, but like, you know, every time somebody says like they've never seen a movie, like you right now, you just said you've never seen E.T. And in these last like 5, maybe 8 years, I've done my best to change, to tweak that a little bit because I don't want to leave a bad impression on the movie. I think my buddy said it best. He's like, dude, when people act like that, I'll be like, fuck you and that movie. Your attitude doesn't want me to see this movie. So, and
yeah,
I'm
like,
damn.
People are like that with you anyways.
Yeah. So, when people tell me they've never seen Poltergeist, I'll be like, oh shit, okay, cool. Well, change that, you know, because that movie rules and I really would like for you to see that. Back in the day, younger edgelord Phil, like,
oh,
what? You've never seen The Godfather, dude? See, in Barbie, when they did that, I was like, fuck, that used to be me. I used to be the problem. But now, I've passed that gene on to my son here. So,
so you might say you're better at taking it than giving it?
It's a learned skill.
This is my first time where I actually get to look at a camera and pretend like, you know, I'm in like the office and like I'll be like, we can finally do that. We can finally do that.
I did do that earlier when you said that because you're like because I'm a long guy and I looked at the camera. I was just like, no, he's not.
No, I've done it like 3 times already.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to get used to this. This is gonna be awesome. All right,
Moving on. Let's continue.
Here we go. The same article noted that the Directors Guild of America had, quote, opened an investigation into the question of whether or not Hooper's official credit has been denigrated by statements Spielberg has made, apparently claiming authorship. That was one long-ass quote. I thought it was going to be a short one. It turned out to be a whole goddamn sentence.
Yeah, because you kept going.
Yeah, I was like, might as well keep on going. The investigation ended in a ruling that the, I'm not going to quote this one, that MGM/UA, United Artists, I'm assuming, entertainment company, must pay $15,000 to direct Toby Hooper because the studio gave producer Steven Spielberg a bigger credit than Hooper got in its trailers, end quote.
Okay.
Although, of course, also nothing that, another quote, broader issues of dispute exist between producer, writer Spielberg, and directors, damages of $200,000 were originally sought out by the DGA. That sounds. This sounds like a clusterfuck, and it sounds like a big ass headache.
This sounds like all your George Lucas's bro.
Yeah,
and he went non-union.
And a lot of studio politics.
Yeah, he's we're gonna fuck you, and also who's Richard Marquand? Jedi boy.
When this movie came out, everyone was chiming in, a lot of the actors were, notably. The person, Zelda Rubinstein, who plays the psychic.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay, yes.
She, slandered the fuck out of Tobe Hooper in, press junkets.
Really?
Yeah, she was straight up, I didn't like him from the beginning. It was very obvious he was on drugs. He didn't direct this movie.
Whoa.
And a lot of other people affiliated with the movie were just he absolutely directed the movie. So there's a lot.
You were on drugs. She had a big part in part two, though.
Dang.
Right?
I haven't seen.
Seen part two, and that was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounds insane, though, because Tobe Hooper, the man's best known besides this, he's best known for Chainsaw Massacre, right? And I'm dude, you're going it seems some kind of like I said earlier, a dick measuring contest, and see who's gonna freaking who's gonna fold first for this director's chair. But is a very... I never knew there was a little bit of drama in this.
Yeah, and there's more.
I always thought it was Spielberg's go ahead, dude. Go ahead, do your thing. But I'll be on set, too. If you need a hand, I knew Spielberg was hands-on, but I didn't know there was this much involved.
I guess this is what happens. You get, a traditionally indie director, which Tobe Hooper was, and give him a studio movie.
Yeah.
This is, studio politics, and he was just oh, shit.
Yeah.
Can't have that.
Mm. Yeah. So, anyways... co-producer Frank Marshall told the LA Times that, quote, the creative force of the movie was Steven. Tobe was the director and was on set every day.
And craft services.
But Steven did the design for every storyboard, and he was on the set every day except for 3 days when he was in Hawaii with George Lucas. End quote.
That's okay. Can you continue? Is that what...
What was he doing in Hawaii alone in the island with George Lucas? Stevie, you got something to tell us here?
Spooning together looking at the sunset. Bam, 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 bam.
Tatooine suns.
It's just one sun, baby. We'll make another one.
Stephen and George are oh, you see that sunset right there, Georgie? Oh, man, that's a beautiful sunset, huh? Anyways. I got this idea for Indiana Jones. It's this guy. He's got the whip, but... I like to use a whip on you
first.
I like
the whip part. I like the whip part. Yeah, the whip part's good.
Let's get back in the cabin. Let's get back in the cabin.
Are there snakes, too?
Do I need to leave?
Trouser snakes.
I didn't look at him when he did that, because that's too much.
No, you have to look him right in the eyes. Assert your dominance.
I want trouser snakes.
Make him weird. You want to be George Lucas? I can be George Lucas if you want. We can switch.
You are better at receiving, so that's true.
Okay, anyways. However, Hooper stated that, quote, he did fully half of the storyboards. Damn, all right, here we go.
So everyone has a different take on this. I unfortunately, just for time, I had to cut, a lot of it. But, everyone had a fucking opinion about who really directed Poltergeist.
Mm.
And a lot of, the cast were just Tobe Hooper was on set every single day. Steven Spielberg was also there, but he was mainly just stepping in when things got hairy. And then there's other people who are Steven Spielberg absolutely directed this movie. I wouldn't give to be on a fly on the wall during the production of this fucking movie.
Well, see, I always wonder too, because Spielberg had a much bigger name than Hooper, so a lot of people were just I want to be on his good fucking side.
From what I've seen and my own personal observations, I feel like they did the thing that a lot of blockbusters do now, where if something is directed by Jason Blum, for example, doesn't matter who directed it. It could be relatively unknown.
Yeah.
But we're going to see from the mind of Jason Blum, on the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if we've just gotten used to that, because that's pretty much what they did for Poltergeist, where it was a Steven Spielberg production. I don't know. Just makes you sense.
I got from watching Mama, because I assumed it was Guillermo del Toro's movie.
I did too. I did.
Yeah, I got because I'm like, this is kind of not his fucking movie.
It's produced by Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, and then it totally wasn't. And I was like, okay.
I think the same thing happened for me with Del Toro also for The Orphanage. I swore I
okay,
thought.
Okay, but
it was
that's like the better result, though.
I thought the Orphanage fucking ruled. When did they come out? 06? I remember like the Del Toro-ness was like already like running through my veins at this time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh fuck, he's got another one. Let's do it.
07.
07. And then I was like, oh fuck yeah, let's go see. And I was like, oh, it's not directed by Del Toro, somebody else. And then I ended up still loving
still
the fuck
amazing,
out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great fucking movie.
Wait, have we not done The Orphanage yet?
Nope.
Oh, shit.
Ooh, just give me an idea
October's
right there.
October's coming up.
Okay.
Do you still have your picking? Yeah.
Well,
I wanted
to cover it, I think, for maybe my birthday month, like a year or so back, but then
okay.
I was like, it's just too sad.
I think we've also been trying to cover it for like 4 years.
Yeah, we've tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen it. No, I saw it once on DVD after it came out. Yeah.
It joins Seven and like The Sixth Sense of like our movies that we've been trying to do.
Oh, we haven't done Seven? Damn.
We haven't done Seven just because we'd have to have friend of the podcast, Sasha, back on.
Okay. Yeah.
Because we promised her Seven.
We did. For like 2 years.
Yeah. And then I've never seen Sixth Sense. So, but I mean, obviously.
No,
like,
you've never seen Sixth Sense?
No. Motherfucker. So I haven't seen Sixth Sense, but I would love to cover it.
Yeah.
And then Orphanage. We have a couple of these. Anyway, sorry.
Cool.
There's a lot of horror movies, ladies and gentlemen.
There is.
There's a lot of horror movies.
And we're just getting started. Season six.
In another episode that we've already recorded, but I'm not going to say which one, I'm just going to say this right here. Season 6! Podcast.
And that's your hint for next week.
There you go.
Nice.
Beautiful. Anyways, let's finish my portion of this, yeah?
Yeah.
So, but that's not where the struggle stopped. Some might say the curse of Poltergeist was just the beginning.
We'll get to that in a minute. So, Poltergeist was released theatrically by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer on June 4th, 1982. The film was a commercial success and earned $76,606,280 in the United States, making it the highest-grossing horror film of 1982 and eighth overall for the year.
We got a Webster number read on camera, baby.
Damn, for real.
Yeah.
We did. Damn, all right.
No flubs.
The film was well-received by critics and is considered by many as a classic of the horror genre, as well as one of the best films of 1982. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has an approval rating of 88% based on reviews from 72 critics, with an average rating of 7.5 out of 10. Surprisingly low.
Very low.
Yeah.
The site's critical consensus reads, quote, smartly filmed, tightly scripted, and, most importantly, consistently frightening.
Poltergeist.
I'm gonna go on and head over to the Poltergeist. Does anybody want to come with me, lads? We're gonna have a couple of points at the Poltergeist.
God damn it.
Watch out for that tree.
Poltergeist is a modern horror classic, unquote. Fuck.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Our boy, Roger Ebert, Ebert quote, gave Poltergeist 3 stars out of 4 and called it, quote, an effective thriller, not so much because of the special effects as because Hooper and Spielberg have tried to see the movie's strange events through the eyes of the family members instead of just standing back and letting the special effects overwhelm the cast along with the audience, unquote. Okay.
that's a review.
They're saving that one for this remake.
Mm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not all reviews are positive. Gene Siskel.
Oh, the other half. Okay.
Yep.
Gave the film 1.5 stars out of 4, writing that Poltergeist, quote, is very good at getting the details of suburban life right. In other words, it sets the stage beautifully, but when it comes time for the terror to begin, the whole thing is very, very silly. Unquote.
All right, Gene. Okay.
I personally love it when Siskel and Ebert disagree.
No, it's crazy.
When I was a kid, I actually watched and tuned in on a couple of episodes.
Oh, Siskel and Ebert, yeah.
Because at first, like, I would watch a lot of movie trailers, like mm-hmm. Hunchback of Notre Dame. I was like, and I'm like, who the fuck is this Gene Siskel guy? And then I was like, just channel surfing. I tuned in, And I remember being in elementary school. I didn't even care that much about movies. I just knew who Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert were. And, dude, I just channel surfed from, I think, Johnny Tsunami to, like, yeah. you know, whatever was playing in the
channel
90s.
Channel 7
yeah.
at Sundays at 6:30.
Yeah, and then, like, I just caught, like, the vortex of them arguing. Like, raising voices, pointing fingers. I forgot for what movie. I really, really, really wish I knew what movie this was so I can YouTube it.
You'd be like, Gene, you're being unfair.
But, yeah, but they were, like, legit yeah. going, like, look, dude, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, all right, man?
They
you don't
that.
Know cinema like
they,
I do, dude.
They said that on network television.
Yeah.
They were, like, you know, they were being very animated, and they were just, like, but they were keeping it fucking professional. I'm, like, 9, maybe 10 years old, and I'm just like, whoa, these guys really care about fucking whatever the movie was. Might be fucking Hunchback of Notre Dame. I don't know. but they're like, look, dude, Frodo's a fucking saint, dude. You're the fucking asshole, dude.
No, yeah, I would actually watch Siskel and Ebert and Ebert and Roper.
Ebert and Roper. That's a little later.
Non-stop.
Yeah, that was like early 2000s. I think I was already like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's when Phil Nerd and
Yeah,
content.
That's when it started birthing in right there. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's a word.
No.
Yeah, that's
why I almost spit out my drink. What the fuck?
Yeah, we're in the afterbirth now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
No. Moving on. On Letterboxd,
hey.
My friends, Poltergeist has a 3.5 out of 5 stars out of 186,000 reviews.
Holy shit, that's a lot.
Wow.
It is a very highly reviewed movie.
That's a lot, dude.
Yeah.
It's definitely
yeah.
Alex Webster special right here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hell yeah, dude.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it.
She did a hell yeah, dude.
Wow.
On the podcast and on video.
Hell yeah, dude.
Hell yeah, dude. Poltergeist.
Get used to that. Get used to that.
I said it once as a joke, and now it is, like, immediately, like, it's, like, ingrained itself into my brain, so now I have to stop
what?
Myself from just going, like, hell yeah, dude.
I love it.
God damn it.
Oh, man.
Anyway. Dirk H, a common frequent reviewer on the podcast with 4.5 stars, says, quote, overlong infomercial on the dangers of watching too much television.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to say Dirk Diggler, a common freak on the podcast. That's what I was
going to
ask.
Damn. Mm-hmm. I didn't
Look, man, it's my poltergeist, all right? And I can do whatever the fuck I want with it, all right? That's my Marvel.
That's, yeah,
no, Marvel. That was
yeah,
good. I knew exactly who you were trying to encapsulate.
Yeah. Thank you.
Shan McAvoy with 3.5 stars, quote, love the teenage daughter. She eats cereal and makes phone calls. Never once has a spooky ghost encounter. She's just at a party while her entire family is getting coffin
fucked. Dude, I remember that. When she comes back, she's like, what the fuck is going on? Well, she didn't say what the fuck is going on, but
yeah.
she's like,
sure.
yeah.
She bolts
just,
out real
she
quick.
She was just tripping out like, what the hell's going on here? it's like that one gif of Donald Glover walking to his apartment.
It's
all
set
on fire.
He's holding pizzas.
He's got pizza. He's like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's literally like that.
I love how also, like, when the kid rolls out, like, the dog goes in the taxi, too.
Oh,
that's one of my
yeah.
favorite things. They're just like, fucking come
yeah.
on. Like, what cab driver's like, are you shitting me?
Yeah.
We didn't agree to this at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween Henry with 4 stars. Quote, one of my earliest memories is of me watching this in a movie theater.
Mm.
It's very possible that I fainted during the face peeling scene.
Oh, wow.
I can't believe my parents took a 4 and a 7-year-old to see it in the theaters. It explains so much. Unquote.
Yeah.
Somebody's like, oh, you should try this charcoal mask. Like,
no. Yeah, Halloween Henry, I think I can relate a little bit to why my parents let me watch certain movies. Yeah, I remember my dad let me watch, like, RoboCop.
Yeah.
When I was, like, 7.
It was
so much. And they just...
so much.
They blew Alex Murphy into fucking pieces, and I'm just like... what just happened?
They're like, he ain't got no legs.
Yeah, and then, like, my dad's like... yeah, that guy's fucking dead. And I'm like, oh shit. Yeah.
Chicano
so,
fathers, ladies
yeah.
and gentlemen. Chicano
so Halloween
fathers.
Henry, I can,
mm-hmm.
I can, yeah, I relate to that.
Oh yeah.
So this is a good point for me to like shoehorn this in here. So my mom saw this movie in theaters when she was 11.
Damn.
And I remember her telling me about this because at the time, her 11-year-old like edgelord nonsense, she hated this movie.
Oh.
She like she was just like her parent, my grandparents like took her and like my aunt to go see it, and well, I guess at this point only one of my because never anyway. And she was just like talking shit the whole time, and I was just like, this is fucking stupid, and she can't watch it now. She won't watch it now. Not because she thought it was stupid. She probably does now, but my mom doesn't like horror films, famously. And, but she can't see children in peril.
Oh,
like, yeah. That's a big thing for her. Oh. Like, ever since she became a mom, like, she can't watch movies that have children in, like, mortal danger.
Like a missing child or something.
Yeah.
Or,
well, in this case, like, she's fucking abducted by ghosts that is just, like, in mortal danger. Yeah. And so she just can't handle it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. My mom also, I recently saw this movie about a year ago or so, maybe less, with my mom. And my mom's like, "Ooh, I remember watching this." She was a little older. I think she was like 18 or something when this movie came out, or maybe 17. And she was also like, I remember she was saying something. She went with her friends to go see it, and then it was like scary as hell. And then so I don't think she's seen this movie since that day in the 80s. And then my dad was like, "Oh, I remember this fucking movie. Yeah, this movie's fucking cool, man." Yeah. And then like we saw the title credits, and they didn't know who Spielberg was because I showed them who Spielberg was. They're not really into movies as I am. And then so like when we watched the movie, it showed like Steven Spielberg production, and my dad's like, "Hey, Spielberg made this. Oh shit, I never knew that." So nice little cool little thing.
Such a little Papa thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good job, Mr. Acevedo.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and meanwhile, my mom showed me movies. She was like, "Listen, we're gonna watch Mijo, The Exorcist and The Omen." So it was never children in peril. It was children that were demons.
Yeah.
So
coming from the man whose name was almost Damien.
Almost Damien. Mm. Almost Damien.
Your name was almost Damien.
It was one of the contenders.
Wow.
Yeah.
Could you imagine Damien Fuentes?
I know.
Damn.
Damien Fuentes would be an entirely different person.
I would still call you the Fuenster, but like, damn. Damien Fuentes? It's got a nice ring to it.
Yeah, we'll see.
Not gonna lie.
We'll see where the next.
I'll tell you this right now. It sounds a lot cooler than Anthony Fuentes.
Nah, dude. Anthony Fuentes is great.
Damien Fuentes sounds like.
No, Damien Fuentes fucks.
Yeah. I was just gonna say that. I was just gonna be like, yo,
Anthony
dude.
Fuentes still fucks.
No, he doesn't.
God damn it.
Damien Fuentes, though.
He really fucks, though. He's
big
actually,
schlong.
Yeah.
Big schlong flapping all over the damn studio.
He
Damien
Fuentes. Without question, fucks.
Like, big schlong, for sure.
Okay.
Like, I'm talking, like, shoo! For
my fictional non-existent name.
Anthony Fuentes, schlong, a little pepino. No. But, yeah.
Can I continue?
Well,
fine. Yeah, we went to the dick top real fast on there, because it is Phil taking over.
Man, I've had a couple of claws. After a few claws, I start talking about dicks.
I've had a few sharp days. What of it?
Damn it.
Fun times.
Wow, we were just, great.
Okay, so, circling back.
Season 6, baby!
Using good old office lingo, I'm going to circle back to what Phil was talking about earlier.
There you go.
The week of the film's release, The Hollywood Reporter printed an open letter to Hooper from Spielberg. Quote, "Regrettably, some of the press has misunderstood the rather unique creative relationship which you and I shared throughout the making of Poltergeist." It makes it sound like they were kissing in the moonlight.
Yeah.
I know you took George to Hawaii. It's fine.
"I enjoyed your openness in allowing me as a writer and a producer a wide berth for creative involvement, just as I know you were happy with the freedom you had to direct Poltergeist so wonderfully.
Shit.
Through the screenplay, you accepted a vision of this very intense movie from the start, and as the director, you delivered the goods. You performed responsibly and professionally throughout, and I wish you great success on your next project." Unquote.
Dude, that's class act 101, dude.
Yeah.
That's fucking beautiful. I've never read this. I've never even knew about this. This is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's some shade right there. What are you talking about?
Shade?
Shade?
Oh, wait. I don't think so, dude.
I read it
as Hooper to Spielberg.
No,
this is from
Spielberg.
To Hooper.
Okay.
This is from Spielberg.
I was like, because that'd be some catty mean girl shit right there.
Dude, I'm always going to love Spielberg. Like, to all the way to death, dude. I think I just loved him a little bit more after this.
Yeah.
I've been a Spielberg. I'm a fanboy. Mm-hmm. And I think I just liked him a little bit more now that I know this piece of information.
Isn't that so nice?
Because that's so cool, because I've always known there was always like a little, I knew there was always like who directed it, you know. But the fact that after reading this now, I really, really appreciate it even more.
Well, you missed the part actually in the press release that comes afterwards. Is, now go home and get your fucking time box.
Like, yeah, you directed the movie, all right? Yeah, I wish you success in your next project, right? Now go home and get your fucking shine box. Toby Hooper, motherfucker! Keep him here. Keep him here. Keep him here, Frank Marshall. Keep him here.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, you haven't seen Goodfellas yet, but that actually was a pretty good joke.
Someday you'll understand the reference. Someday you'll understand the reference.
I can't wait. We're going to have a spaghetti and we're going to watch it.
Hey, he's going to Singapore. We're going to go see Scarface in Sinespia. You in or nah?
Sure.
All right, cool. That's good. That's a good shirt. But yeah. when we do...
I have to consult my calendar because I literally am insanely busy. But if I am free, I would be happy to go.
For sure.
When we do a Goodfellas Zerk, though, we're going to have her stir the meatballs all day.
Yep. I'll slice the onions with the razor.
Yeah,
that'd
be perfect. Isn't I want her on the sauce all day while we look at helicopters.
No, there you go.
That'd be perfect.
We also got to...
Don't say it.
No, we're on air. We're on air, Phil.
Literally, our faces are attached to this now. Please don't.
There's only one way to see helicopters. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. And I think this is the part where we can stop laughing because I'm going to look into the camera for this because it's serious. The next section, we're talking about domestic violence and murder.
Oh, fuck.
So if that is something you don't want to hear people talk about, skip ahead. But yeah, I think this is the point where we can stop laughing.
Okay. All right. Are you ready for Poltergeist Curse Part D? That's number two. Yeah.
Hot Shots Part D. Poltergeist.
Anyways, Dominic Dunn met
Dominique.
Dominic.
Like Dominic Toretto.
No, I was like Dominic Mysterio.
This movie really is about family, though.
Dominic Dunn met John Thomas Sweeney, a sous chef at the restaurant Ma Mason, at a party in 1981. Cool. So after a few weeks of dating, they moved into a one-bedroom house together on Wrangley Avenue in good old WeHo, West Hollywood.
Dominic Dunn, who?
She was the sister.
Okay, cool.
Due to Sweeney's jealousy and possessiveness, however, the relationship quickly deteriorated. The couple frequently fought, and Sweeney began to physically abuse Dunn.
No,
Sweeney.
So, how old was she around this time already? In 1981? How old was she again? I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
No, this is good information to know right now. I mean, you know how it is.
She was 22. She was 22.
She must have been like 21 when she filmed this movie?
This is in 81. Okay. So, around the same... Yeah,
probably
she was
in the bag
22,
Of course. So, on September 26, 1982, Sweeney grabbed Dunn by the throat, threw her on the floor, and began to strangle her. Holy shit. A friend who was staying with the couple at the time heard, quote-unquote, loud gagging sounds. And, of course, ran into the room where Dunn was being physically attacked. Yeah. Dunn told the friend that Sweeney had actually tried to kill her, but Sweeney denied the claim and asked Dunn to come back to bed. Oh, motherfucker. Mm. She pretended that she was going to comply with his request, of course, but she snuck out the bathroom window. Now, when Sweeney heard Dunn start the engine of the car, he ran out and jumped on the hood of the vehicle. Dunn stopped the car long enough for Sweeney to jump off the hood, and then she drove her ass away. Good job, lady.
Good
fucking job. All right.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
For the next few days, she stayed with her mother, and she also stayed at the homes of her friends. She later called Sweeney and ended the relationship. Good. After he moved out, she had the locks changed and moved back into the Wrangley Avenue home. Now, on October 30th, 1982, a few weeks after Sweeney and Dunn broke up, Dunn was at her West Hollywood home rehearsing with actor David Packer. Now, while she was speaking to a friend on the phone, Sweeney had the operator break into the conversation.
Which I didn't know that was a thing you could do.
I didn't know that was a fucking thing you could do. Holy shit. I mean, technology was kind of weird back then, so yeah. Dunn told her friend, "Oh God, it's Sweeney. Let him get off the phone. Let me get him off the phone." Yes. 10 minutes later, however, Sweeney showed up at Dunn's home. You just gotta watch out with these fucking people sometimes. Yeah. After speaking to him through the locked door, Dunn agreed to speak to him on the porch while Packer remained inside. Ugh.
Oh gosh.
Outside, the two began to argue. Later, Packer said that he heard smacking sounds, two screams, and a thud. Concerned, he called the police, but he was informed that Dunn's home was out of their jurisdiction because LA fucking PD, of course.
What the fuck?
Yeah, even in the 80s, buddy. Even in the 80s. Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Packard then phoned a friend and told him that if he was found dead, John Sweeney was the killer. Ugh. Packard left. Yeah. Packer left the home through the back entrance, approached the driveway, and saw Sweeney in some nearby bushes, kneeling over Dunn. Sweeney told Packer to call the police. Oh.
And this time they showed up.
Yeah, great.
What?
Great, yeah. When police arrived, Sweeney met them in the driveway with his hands in the air and stated, I killed my girlfriend. I tried to kill myself. Yeah.
Whoa!
Sweeney later testified that he and Dunn had argued, but he could not remember what happened after their exchange.
Convenient, one might say.
Yeah,
oh,
definitely nothing fed to him by his lawyers. So he claimed that he could only recall being on top of her with his hands around her neck. Ay, 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 these people.
So yo, she's dead? She died?
She technically survived. We're about to find out.
Yeah.
Okay.
The story continues.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Dunn was transported to Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, where she was placed on life support. Wow.
Dang.
She never regained consciousness. Over the following days, doctors performed brain scans, which revealed that due to oxygen deprivation, she had no brain activity. And of course, on November 4th, 19 days after her 23rd...
Before
her 23rd birthday, her parents consented to have her removed from life support. At the request of her mother, Dunn's kidneys and hearts were donated to transplant recipients. Damn.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Sweeney was charged with first-degree murder, to which he pled not guilty. Oh, my. Yay. Sweeney was later charged with assault with intent to do great bodily harm when, during preliminary trial hearing, he admitted that he and Dunn had a physical altercation on September 26, 1982, the day before she filmed an episode of a TV show in which she appeared with visible bruises on her face and body. He denied assaulting Dunn, however, claiming that she accidentally incurred the bruises when he tried to prevent her from leaving their home. That's so much better.
This guy's a fucking piece of shit.
No,
oh, man.
Yeah. Wow. During the trial, Sweeney alleged that he and Dunn had reconciled and were planning on moving back together. Take him for his fucking word. Something that, however, unlikely, couldn't have been proven false by, of course, the prosecutors.
Jeez.
Yeah, just take his fucking word for it. Okay.
I mean,
wow. If
it's a conversation between two people and one of them is dead, like, you can only take the word. You can't prove it unless there was another party.
Wow.
The legal system is a fucking fraud.
It's not the only system in America that's pretty... fucked.
Yeah, there's no Wall Street stories in this one.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I left out the white collar crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
He's fucked. No.
Jeez. Yeah.
The movie didn't make money. I don't believe that.
So. It was money laundering.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're done joking.
We're done. We're good. Yeah. That was, Dunn's family disputed Sweeney's claim that she had reconciled with him. However, they insisted that he went to Dunn's home on October 30th in an effort to persuade her to reconcile after she told him that their breakup was motherfucking permanent. The prosecution and police investigators also dismissed Sweeney's version of the events because he sounds like such a stand-up guy.
Mm.
Namely, the suicide attempt because there was no physical evidence that he had consumed pills at the time of his arrest.
Mm.
I don't know what his thought would be for something like that, where it's just like if I just pretend that I was going to kill myself, people would take me more sympathetic? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think... It's one of those things, I think back then they were just like, well, he's a white dude, we'll trust his ass. Like, yeah, he says he killed himself, yeah, but
jeez.
I think it was too egregious at this point, and it's an actor, celebrity person, so yeah, sorry, buddy. At the end of the trial, the defense claimed that the court lacked sufficient evidence to try Sweeney on the charge of first-degree murder because predetermination was not established. What? The courts granted their request, and the jurors could only consider manslaughter or second-degree murder charges.
Wow.
Keep reading. It gets worse.
Jeez.
After 8 days of deliberation, the jury acquitted John Sweeney of second-degree murder, but found him guilty of the lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter. He was also convicted of misdemeanor assault for a previous altercation. What? Sweeney was sentenced?
Yeah, even the judge was just like... they completely misunderstood the assignment, basically.
Yeah.
And the jurors later in an interview said that it was an unfair assessment. But even the judge was just like, this is fucked.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wow.
Dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, okay. Sweeney was sentenced to 6 years in prison for manslaughter, which was the maximum sentence that he could have received, with an additional 6 months for the assault charge.
And just when you think it couldn't get any fucking worse, keep reading,
oh
Anthony.
My God.
After the trial, John Sweeney was incarcerated in a medium security prison in Susanville, California, He was released on parole on September 1986, after only serving 3 years and 7 months and 27 days of his 6.5-year sentence.
Oh my god, dude.
Sweeney changed his name to harassment from the Dunn family and moved to the Pacific Northwest, where people notoriously are very much off the grid over there.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, he's still, like, a chef. Like, he's, I mean, he's still there.
What is he, like, 60 now?
I mean, he has to be, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what a piece of shit.
Yeah, so the Dunn family, like, would not let it fucking go after he got out.
Yeah.
Like, he got, like, a job in Santa Monica as a chef, and they would stand outside the restaurant and hand out pamphlets, like,
wow.
This piece of shit works here.
Yeah, good. Fucking good.
Yeah.
And then, at one point, he got engaged to another woman. And that woman's father called the Dunn family and was like, is this the same fucking guy? And they're like, yeah, it's the same guy. And basically broke up that engagement. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Dude,
and then after that, he basically took them to court for harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And he changed his name and moved to the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
Now,
dude, I honestly had no idea that she died. I didn't even know she was like... Oh, shit. This is all kind of news to me.
I mean, we have time, so I can give you the Cliff Notes version. Also, Heather O'Rourke died horrifically.
Yes.
The little girl?
Yes.
Wait, you know about this?
I didn't know about this.
No,
wait,
that's why I thought we were going with the curse, because,
yes.
But the little... Wait, they're here?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, she
died
bad.
She died right before, like, during the third
movie. During the third one, because they had to reshoot the third one.
Yeah.
Based around her not completing scenes.
So, she died during the filming of the third movie. She basically got, like, septic shock. She had Crohn's disease, or she was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And basically, she had, like, the equivalent of, like, a stroke in, like, the blood vessels, like, in her gestational tract.
Mm-hmm.
And her, like, it's super, super sad. Like, she, like, basically, like, felt like she had the flu, and then her heart just fucking stopped.
Yeah. Was she, like, a teenager?
No, she was a child. She was, like,
what,
like 10.
Because I'm thinking, like, Poltergeist 3 came out also in the 80s, so she must have been, like, 14, maybe? I don't know how she was.
No. She was super young.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like,
damn, that's nuts. I had no idea both of these actresses died.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of, like, there's a whole, like, curse thing, too, with it. Now, I don't know if we're going to get to it, but there's also some curse aspects for the sequel, too, part two.
Actually, I did not talk about the sequels at all. She was 12.
Damn,
she was 12 when she died?
Yeah, it's really
sad.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Maybe we'll do an episode on Poltergeist 2 and 3, because maybe we'll just put them all in one thing, because it is a cursed franchise for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the movie,
like
and I wanted to tell this story, because it felt a little bit more...
Yeah,
there's so much
for this one.
Yeah, there's so much drama behind this one. It's
insane. Again, also stuff had to get cut for time.
Yeah.
A lot of the trial I cut out. That's why we know so much about, like, on this day, like, they had this altercation, and, like,
mm-hmm.
we know so much because of the trial.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's insane, dude.
Yeah.
Oh,
well. So, yeah, just for listeners, like, this is... The first part of this whole trilogy is kind of fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If we follow it at some point during later seasons, whatever it is, like, you'll find out that there's always some messed up shit happening with every installment. This is pretty fucked up, though. I didn't realize there was a murder aspect to this whole thing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really sad, and also, like, it didn't need to happen.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, something that, I don't know. I mean, in the 80s, I think even, like, domestic violence resources were, like, few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because even now, it's, like, it's not very accessible. So,
right.
It's really, really sad. And also, a lot of people just kind of, like, assume, like, because she was a celebrity, like, she could kind of handle her shit.
Yeah.
But I'm like, she was 22. She was
dude,
a child.
She was still young. Yeah, dude. I had no idea both of these actresses passed,
mm-hmm.
like, so early, too.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, just right after the freaking movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Damn.
E did a Curse of the Poltergeist thing.
That's what I remember watching.
I remember watching it too. That's how I knew this before even going into it. It's like an hour and a half long. It's on YouTube if you can deal with pretty much like VHS quality, because it came out like early 2000s.
I think it has an appeal to it.
I think it does. I was just gonna say that.
It does have a found footage feel to it for sure. Like I kept expecting like ghosts to pop out, but they talk about like the curse of Poltergeist and how like basically like there was a lot of like technical issues while filming. And obviously these two horrifically tragic deaths. But
yeah. I remember in that Craig T. Nelson's very much just like, I wasn't a believer before, but now holy shit.
Yeah.
Like wow. He's definitely that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, there were like various ghost sightings and like all that good stuff. So.
All the fun stuff. Yeah.
That is wild. I had no idea. Well, yeah, it looks like it's my turn. So let's talk about the legacy of Poltergeist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So I hope we can switch things around a little bit.
Listen, you're not alone. There are resources out there for you. We're going to start making jokes again.
Oh.
Thank you.
If we can just turn those frowns upside down for just a bit, I think I'm the guy for the job.
Thanks.
So, Poltergeist's special effects and score were both nominated for Oscars, but lost to Steven Spielberg's bigger film, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, in 1982, in both categories.
Hedging his
God,
fucking
that sucks.
Best.
I mean, it's John fucking Williams, and that score fucks. That E.T. score is phenomenal. But holy shit, I mean, Spielberg kind of cheated a little bit here. Yeah, had two movies.
I mean, he double-dipped for sure.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, double-dip. Mm-hmm. I like that. Hey. In the years since its release, the film has been recognized as a horror classic.
For good fucking reason.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. It was named by the Chicago Film Critics Association as the 20th scariest film ever made, and the scene of the clown doll attack was ranked as number 80 on Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments.
I believe it's also included in 101 Movie Moments that Shaped Me or something, the Shudder documentary,
the Shudder one,
which is so fucking good.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
It's also a scary fucking scene, too.
Yeah. Oh, also, there's a film series on Shudder called Cursed Films, and Poltergeist is like the first fucking episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I gotta check that out.
It's famously
now.
Cursed.
All right, I'll check that out. Poltergeist also appeared as number 84 on American Film Institute's 100 Years, 100 Thrills, a list of America's most heart-pounding movies.
It's a little low for me.
Yeah.
But also, the last 100 years, there's a lot to take in, so.
Yeah, I would like to see what's like the top 5, at least, or top 10. I would like to see that. The film was followed by, of course, a sequel named Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, which was released in 1986, and followed by Poltergeist 3, which was released in 1988, and a poorly received 2015 remake. I remember seeing this remake.
Who was the stars?
I don't remember. It is super forgettable.
It was Samsung.
Top 5. I found the list.
Oh, what's the top? AFI's yes. 100 Years, 100 Thrills?
Yes.
All right, what is it?
Psycho.
What, the shower scene, I'm assuming?
Yes.
That's number one?
Yes, number one,
okay.
Psycho.
All right.
Number two, Jaws.
Okay, all right. That's
What scene? The freaking...
Don't you hate sharks?
Yes. It's frightening, but holy fuck, come on, man.
Three, The Exorcist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Four, North by Northwest.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Number four?
I don't know about number four, but...
It's got to be the airplane scene.
Yeah.
It's got to be the airplane scene.
And five, The Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, that's a tense one.
Ooh, all right.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is on here, by the way.
Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, it's number 10.
It's probably the Covenant scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched the Covenant scene a little too young, and I was traumatized.
It's a lot of face melting.
But I was, like, kind of obsessed with it. Like, I was just like, oh, no, don't show me the face melting scene.
Yeah. It's super, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Rear Window's on here.
Nice.
The Manchurian Candidate.
Okay.
Vertigo, your favorite movie.
Vertigo's cool. I love Vertigo.
Anthony and I famously hate Vertigo.
Don't care for Vertigo.
I don't, I still think Rear Window is my favorite one compared to...
Taxi Driver.
No, I mean, obviously. Taxi
Driver. Oh, it's got to be the hallway scene. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Titanic is on here. Star Wars is on here. The Deer Hunter.
I love The Deer Hunter. Deer Hunter is such a good movie.
The Fugitive and Jurassic Park are all on here. Casablanca.
I didn't kill my wife. Tommy Lee Jones.
Harrison Ford right there.
I don't care!
Die Hard.
Wait, Ooh, Fugitive had a sequel, didn't it?
The Fugitive had two sequels. So technically, The Fugitive, it goes The Fugitive, then U.S. Marshals.
U.S. Marshals!
With Wesley Snipes and Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
And then followed by a third one that's kind of somewhat of, it's like a low-key trilogy. But The Hunted with Tommy Lee Jones and Benicio del Toro.
Oh, shit.
That's the
okay.
The Fugitive trilogy. All
right, all right,
yeah.
All right.
Phil got remarkably passionate about The Fugitive.
Hey. The Fugitive fucks, dude.
I saw U.S. Marshals.
And U.S. Marshals is a solid-ass sequel. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes, absolutely.
Or 90s boys. It's going to be like this every time something old gets. It
has a young-ass Robert Downey Jr., Wesley Snipes, post-Blade.
Okay.
Speed is on this list.
Speed? Oh, well, that whole fucking movie.
Yeah.
Dude, I recently watched Speed.
Oh, my God. You know what I watched for the first time?
Huh.
Just for funsies? The Phone Booth.
Phone Booth.
Oh,
rules.
Yeah, Joel Schumacher.
You saw it for the first time?
Yeah, it was
yeah.
so good.
That movie rules, dude.
Oh,
Joel
my God.
Schumacher. Yeah.
Like, because I love Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
So watching him just be like a fucking scumbag, I was just like, what
I remember
the
I saw
fuck?
It in theaters when I was like 14 or something like that. I remember it was one of those movies that my mom would just drop me off at the movie theater and I would just be there for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
Phone Booth was one of those movies that I just movie hopped to.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's such a tense movie that
yeah.
takes place in the same 5 square feet.
It's like literally 90 minutes, probably.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah.
No, it is a quick, like,
yeah.
an hour 27.
Yeah.
Like, it is
yeah.
super,
it's
super...
It's super quick.
Kiefer Sutherland's the voice,
dude,
right?
He is
Sutherland
the fucking
so
voice.
Good.
And I was just
you
like...
You ever seen it?
Oh.
Oh, no, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
I've seen it, yeah.
Right.
I recognized it immediately because
mm-hmm.
I fucking love Kiefer
yeah,
Sutherland.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland, another Schumacher-Kiefer Sutherland
yes.
fucking collaboration,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And so, like, yeah, that movie fucking rules. I love Phone Booth. Phone Booth, I recently
I
saw it.
I meant to text
recently.
You guys after I watched it, because
yeah.
I was just like, they're going to appreciate this.
That
I
movie fucking
just
rules.
Throw more Schumacher at you. Like,
yeah.
Falling down.
Yeah. Down
I fucking love Schumacher.
Yeah. yeah.
And then finally, we have Full Metal Jacket at 95 and Blue Velvet at 96.
Ooh.
Mm.
Okay.
Honestly, Blue Velvet does freak me out a
yeah.
little.
Yeah.
Like,
Blue
especially
Velvet's,
with, like,
good
with
one,
the fucking
yeah.
mask.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
dude, Dennis Hopper, man. I think he's what really makes that movie psychologically
terrifying.
Fucked.
Yeah.
yeah.
Don't look at me.
Yeah.
Don't look at me. It's the
you
just,
fuck.
Like, yeah.
You
don't
fucking
look
fuck.
yeah. Okay.
Anyway,
well,
so sorry.
Yeah, that's
yes.
okay. That's all
right. We had a good
we derail sometimes.
We
it's fine. Yes.
We totally do derail.
Hey.
where were we?
Oh, also Sam Rockwell was in the shitty remake.
Oh,
yes,
he was. That's right.
He was. Yes, he was.
I remember I didn't listen to AD, but in 2015, my friend AD did say, dude, I just saw the fucking Poltergeist remake. That movie fucking sucked. And for some reason, I was like, well, it looked cool in the trailer. I'll go check it out. Maybe he's wrong. And I was like, fuck, dude, I just spent $10. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
I was like, this
back
is
when a movie
sucks.
Ticket cost
$10. Yeah. And I was like, man, fuck this. This movie fucking, yeah.
The poster, I hate.
I know.
It's
was,
just like the clown. It's the
clown
face.
But it's
and,
a terrible clown design
well,
to remake
but
that.
It doesn't in any way communicate that it's a remake of
yeah.
fucking Poltergeist to me.
Like
I,
Saw or something.
Well,
yeah.
I thought it was just like another horror movie
mm-hmm.
called Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that they were like, you know, like I was just
yeah.
like, okay, they call this movie Poltergeist 2. I mean, it's a little fucked up, but like
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fucking remake.
It looked very straight to DVD-ish,
it's,
the poster.
Yeah. Definitely all on the lower side of that era
yeah.
horror remake.
It's
stuff.
Super
yeah.
forgettable, and I'm just like, it's one of those remakes where you're just like, why did they do this?
Is that in the
and
Amityville Horror with Ryan Reynolds?
I remember that one too, yeah.
Also
I,
garbage.
You know
also
what?
Garbage.
You know what remake, horror remake, is actually not so bad? The Omen. That came out
oh,
in 666.
Oh, Julia Stiles?
Yeah. And Leo Schreiber.
Yep, that's right.
I remember it was Senior Ditch Day in 06, and the Omen remake just came out. It came out on 666,
mm-hmm.
and our senior ditch day was 666. So maybe I was high, and that's probably why I like the remake, actually. But that's the only time I actually saw the remake was senior ditch day.
Yeah.
But I remember we smoked weed in the parking lot, then we went to the movies, then we went to go see the Omen. And I remember seeing the first one, the original, like when I was a kid. But as a teenager, I saw the remake. I thought it was like, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But this is 18-year-old Phil saying this.
You check it out.
So,
you should check it out again. Because
yeah.
I haven't seen it since then either.
Yeah. Julia Stiles was in it, and Liev Schreiber was the dad, and the kid that played Damien was pretty cool.
Howdy little fucking
yeah.
kid.
Yeah.
He was just staring at that camera,
yeah.
just dead-eyed
yeah.
the whole
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
yeah.
Some horror remakes are actually kind of appreciated. In this case, with Poltergeist, no.
We may have more. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. Shall we continue?
Yes, let's wrap it up. Let's go.
Because there's more.
All right, cool. In April of 2019, it was announced that the Russo brothers would helm a new remake.
I don't know if this is in development hell or not, because it's been a while, but...
All right. Look, the Russo brothers, I'll say this about the Russo brothers. I felt like they were super comfortable and they collaborated very well with Marvel for giving us Infinity War, Civil War, Endgame, and Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Did you guys see The Gray Man?
The Gray Man?
Yeah.
No.
Their follow-up after Endgame.
No.
It is the most forgettable, super meh action movie of all time with Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling.
They got used to...
AKA my twin brother.
Okay,
yeah,
please.
Dude. Yeah.
And future...
And my future...
Ex-wife.
My future ex-wife, Ana de Armas.
Ana de Armas,
dude, that sounds like a solid-ass movie, right? One of the worst... I wouldn't say worst, but super bland, super meh action movies of all time.
I remember seeing, like, maybe advertisements.
Like 2 years ago, I think?
Yeah,
I think
it was 2022.
Like
it was last year.
Yeah. Super forgettable... And it's super... The CGI is just like...
Oh,
what?
God. Chris Evans' mustache in this movie makes it look like he's like an alt-right neo-Nazi.
Yeah, he looked like a Proud Boy for sure. Yeah. He did. All he needed was like one of those collared shirts.
The one that was like all the way up here.
Yeah, he needed one of those.
Tiki Evans, dude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, seriously. Yeah. Like, the
I'm
mustache
not
is not
so
a good look
for the Russo brothers to be taking over the Poltergeist, I don't know.
Well, okay, because here's the thing. It's like, I'm going to give them a lot of fucking leeway because... I Live and Die by Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. But also, pre-Marvel, they were really good.
Yeah.
Like, they were very, very good.
Pre-phase, whatever phase they're in right now.
you can't always fault them for one movie.
Yeah, of course,
you know?
Of course.
Every director has it. So, there's two of them. We'll see where they go from here.
Yeah.
I just don't think Poltergeist is going to be that movie, though. That's not... wouldn't be that movie.
When I hear about directors like this, it's like, big-name directors taking over horror film property, and they're going to make it into a remake. I have zero hope for this David Gordon Green
Exorcist
remake.
They did produce Everything Everywhere All at Once, though.
Wait, the Russo brothers?
Yes, they're credited as producers.
Okay, all right, well. Have you guys still not seen Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Still not seen it.
Sorry I brought that up.
Wow. Well, thanks for bringing it up, because now we got it on video to admit that in our dear Lord...
Lord 2023.
2023, you guys still have not seen Everything Everywhere All at Once.
You've been asking for a long time. Listen to our previous episodes. Just listen to all of them, you know? Eventually you'll find where Phil's pissed about
you
this.
You guys still have not seen Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, but they also produced that 21 Bridges movie.
Let's wrap it up. We're tired of the Russo's filmography.
We're done with the Russo brothers.
Sorry.
Anyways, I have no faith for Russo brothers doing the Poltergeist remake, and whatever. That's it. In popular culture, Poltergeist has been parodied and referenced almost too many times to count.
Very true.
Including a song from Misfits, not The Misfits, Miss Alex Webster, who wrote the script, put the in front of Misfits. There is no the in front of Misfits. It's just Misfits.
My bad.
You're triggering real hard with
Phil's got something to say.
Don't finish that line.
Webster put a the in front of the Misfits.
Okay.
In front of Misfits. There you go. Now I said it.
Wow.
Anyways, Scary Movie 2.
Great reference.
I'm sorry, I haven't seen Scary Movie 2 in a long time. What's the reference?
It was the clown with the dick.
That's right! I was like, dude, I haven't seen a Scary Movie 2
in a
long time.
When he, like, flips it on the clown? He's
yes!
You want to take a bite?
That's hilarious. Spice Girls parodied or mentioned or referenced Poltergeist?
Yes.
Okay, alright. Plus, two separate animated TV series helmed by Seth MacFarlane have parodied Poltergeist. In the 2006 Family Guy episode... called Peter Geist.
Of course.
American Dad also parodied the film with the season 10 episode Poltergasm. That's funny.
Seth MacFarlane's a fan. MacFarlane's a fan.
Poltergeist's legacy lives on, of course. Most famously, perhaps, in the intro to the Horrible People's Podcast.
We have used it more than anyone in history.
That's going to be right up top, baby. Season 6.
We're the most famous and the best and the most good looking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have evidence now to prove our good looks. There we go. However, I just want to say one more thing, guys. Just to wrap up my portion of the script. Happy season 6, everybody.
Yay!
And sorry to make it sad. But
I made it sad.
Hey, listen, if Anthony has written all the episodes that made me cry, I was just like, I gotta put in something very sad.
Yeah, dude, I had, alright, to be honest, I think we were texting earlier. I had, to be dead honest, I had no idea this movie was cursed.
Yeah, dead ass for real.
It's
for
just
real.
A movie that I've always fucking loved. I know Spielberg was like heavily involved in it. It's a movie I've seen since I was a kid. I think we're in discussion time now, right?
Yeah, we're about to
I
just
think
go
this is obviously
just going
discussion
to format wise. We do
so,
discussion after
this.
Yeah,
this is discussion time. So, I had no idea this movie was like cursed. When I think of like cursed movies, I've always thought of like The Crow. But now I think I'm gonna be forever now be thinking
oh, there's
about,
even
about
more
Bumblefish.
Films.
I'm sure there is. I do remember tuning in to the helicopter movie, the
Twilight Zone
movie. Mm-hmm.
Also,
and I was like, yeah,
involving Steven Spielberg.
That's nuts. Yo, what if my boy Stevie's like involved in?
No, he wasn't involved directly. He was really good friends with John Landis at the time. You can listen to the episode to get more on this. But him and John Landis were really good friends. And Steven Spielberg was like appalled at the whole like tragedy.
Yeah.
And basically severed ties with John Landis immediately after, just because of how like famously known he is for being like a good director to work with child actors.
Yeah, it really was some shit. Like, yeah, we go pretty deep into it, and there was a recently released book on that got even more stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe when we visit, we'll see what happens. Wow. Because yeah. Hey, look at us.
Let's go. All right, we've talked a lot about the movie, but we haven't really gotten into our thoughts on the movie quite yet. Mm-hmm. So let's just run through some discussion real quick. We're already running a little low on time, but that's okay.
We knew it would be long. It would be long.
Thoughts on Poltergeist.
I mean, nostalgia aside, I think this movie is still incredible.
Yeah.
I've watched this movie so many times ever since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. My parents actually showed it to me because they had some nostalgia to it for sure. And so, aside from all that, I'm putting nostalgia aside, and I'm just thinking that this is still a really well-produced movie. Learning, as we're recording this, I learned a whole lot more about this movie. I didn't know there was, like, this somewhat tension between directors on who's actually helming this project. I really, really do love to see Spielberg being the class act that he is. He's like, hey, dude, you're the fucking director.
Yeah.
And that made me appreciate not just him more, but this whole entire project a little bit more. It fucking sucks learning that the two actresses died in this, post this, you know? But that just kind of made me raise some eyebrows like, oh shit, maybe this shit is really fucking cursed. I kind of was like a non-believer in this kind of stuff, and then now I'm, you know, okay, yeah, like kind of like Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah.
But this whole movie from start to finish is just a fantastic journey. You're stepping into the world of this family that's going through some really, really creepy shit in their house. And it all happens because of good old capitalism and real estate douchebaggery.
Suburban
evil
at its worst.
I still gotta say, one of the best, most... I do this thing on Instagram. I've been doing this for like about a year and a half now. Like movie scenes that live free in my mind, part whatever. I'm surprised I still haven't done the headstones thing yet.
Because
that's one that really lives in my mind forever. It's like, you son of a bitch, you moved the cemetery, but you left the heads, the bodies.
They moved the gravestones, but
yes,
they didn't move the bodies.
And then he says, you only moved the headstones. And he goes, why? Why? Like, dude, the way he fucking screams. And then it cuts to the shot of the real estate guy. He's got these he's got these eyes full of terror. Because you're seeing this madman fucking losing it.
Who's just like...
Yeah.
My daughter got pulled into a hell dimension, you bitch.
Yes. So I think it's fantastic performances. I think that the mom and dad were fucking awesome. The kids were great. The special effects were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This movie rules. I really do love this movie. This is a movie that I can really watch at least once a year, to be honest.
Yeah.
I love it. There's probably, I don't know, there's this weird jump cut that I still remember when they're talking about... Before they go to the neighbor's house, it cuts Do you know what jump cut I'm talking
about? Exactly
what
you're
it's super
about.
Jarring. To this day, it still bugs
it's
the fuck
out of me.
It's like
10 minutes gone from the movie.
Yeah, it bugs the fuck out of me. I don't know why, but it's still. I don't know. Like, I'm like, dude, you got Spielberg. This is a Spielberg production. Why does this feel like a student film that just cuts like this, you know?
But it's so tonally different.
Yeah, it's such a totally different thing because it just cuts and now they're like in front of the neighbor's house waiting for the neighbor to, you know. But anyways.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't know. That's like my only thing that kind of bugs me about it. Other than that, special effects rules, visuals. This fucking movie is awesome. I love it. It's like one of those movies. Like if you're somebody that wants to get into the horror genre, this is one of the movies. Like, all right, let's start chewing a little slow. I'm gonna throw in Poltergeist at you. Maybe I'm gonna throw The Exorcist.
My unfortunate thing, I did it for Flynn, and I only did it once, thank God, and I didn't do it at all in the episode. I know they're completely different movies. I've seen them both. I love them both. I have an Exorcist poster hanging on my wall right now. For some fucking reason, I will flip Poltergeist and The Exorcist all the fucking time in my head. Like, I was texting him, and I was like, I have to write the outline for The Exorcist. And he's like, did you mean The Poltergeist?
That's true, we did that.
And I was like, fuck.
In a regular-ass conversation,
I don't know why. Like, maybe because, like, the posters are both, like, kind of green-tinted or, like, light blue or, like, I don't know what it is.
I'm
but, like,
aware of a similar era and thematic kind of thing.
I guess, but, yeah. Like, it just, like, for some reason, it just, like, I flip them in my head all the time, even though, like, in my head I will know that I'm talking about I'm talking about Poltergeist, but my mouth will say The Exorcist.
No, we've all had that happen.
I look at those two movies as like titans in the genre. Because like they're not like I think The Exorcist is like the superior horror film, but I just like I don't know when it comes to like the horror genre, like the two intros, like alright, if you're really trying to get into horror films, these are two movies you really gotta watch. Then you can get into like the A24 shit, then you can get into like, you know, the fucking, you know, the Wicker Man and shit like that, you know, like
I
so like whatever
you
want,
you
know?
Understand horror in this era.
Yeah.
These are kind of very good examples of like what was popular at the time and also what still kind of stands the test of time. Because it does. It's a very, very good movie. I quite like it a lot. I forgot how much nostalgia I have for the movie. Like, I actually totally didn't remember. Because I used to watch it so much when I was a kid. Like, a lot. And then, like, I don't know, I became like an actual teenager and just watched other shit. And Poltergeist kind of fell by the wayside. But it is one of those that I think it kind of has this lore, American iconography feel to it. Like, it really does. And then also... he's just taking a picture of the fucking cat right now. Oh,
is Britannia? Is Britannia being a Dark Knight
at us right now? She's like, they're talking about ghosts. Talking about fucking ghosts. Oh, look at her. Yeah, she's about this. I can see the Poltergeist music playing in the background.
She's just watching us. She's like when will you fuckers leave?
I know. He's got like a claw in him already. So, no, I would say though. I actually grew up partially in a neighborhood that was built on top of a Native American burial ground. So,
oh,
what?
Yeah, we've talked about this before.
Oh, fuck.
We have?
Yeah, and remember that street I grew up on that I always talk about was always like October. It always felt like fall. So what happened in this street is it was a cul-de-sac that went way deep down a hill. I was at the bottom of the hill. And across the street, it was on McKinley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there were just hills. There was no other houses, nothing like that. And just a Native American burial cemetery was across the street. And you would always visit the hills and climb up and do, like, people dirt bike and shit. But the cemetery always stood there. What we learned later on is that was only for the royal family. That was only for the elites of the tribe. Everyone else was buried down the hill underneath all the homes. So, yeah, it was a haunted-ass, weird fucking neighborhood. It definitely had an eerie, like I said, always October feel to it. But, you know, when I look at a movie like this, the vibe's still there. It's this weird suburban creepiness that I think the movie nails. And
I think it's beautiful that you bring up Corona. Because Corona, California has a lot... Like, there's parts of Corona that reminds me so much of E.T.
Yes.
And I always say... that E.T. and Poltergeist, it's a movie that I wish are, like, in the same universe. Because the neighborhoods look very similar.
They do.
Right?
They definitely do.
And, like, I've been saying this since I was a kid. I was like, in my mind, both of these movies exist in the same fucking universe. You know, it's the Steven Spielberg verse or whatever you want to call it. That's creepy that that you mentioned that about Indian burial grounds, because this movie taught me to do a little research about the property you're about to buy before
you wonder why us fucking Chicanos were able to leave the hood and get such a good deal on a home.
So what's the catch, buddy? Yeah. Indian burial ground.
Oh, you're like, wow, we can actually pay a really good amount right here. Okay, cool. Yeah. We'll move the kids to a better school district. Barely better. But yeah, it was because it was built on graves. So, but hey, we went to good schools. The schools actually weren't that bad. Worth it.
Webster, what do you think of Poltergeist?
I fucking love this movie. It's super fun. I think it has that, like, Spielberg-y feel to it that, like, is a very cool... I'm gonna use a fancy, you know, academic word, but it's a cool juxtaposition of something that's, like, super fucking terrifying, but at the same time feeling so... suburban and like familial, like I don't know. It makes it scarier. It does. Yeah. It makes it scarier. Yeah, like I'm even thinking about like the Gene Siskel review where he was just like, it's too suburban. I'm like, I feel like the suburbia of it all makes it that much scarier.
Yeah.
Especially just because I am already deeply unsettled by like rows of houses that look exactly the same and like just like neighborhoods like that where when you zoom out, all you see are like the same colored rooftops and like it just it deeply upsets me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I think I would love to see, like, I know Spielberg's an old man now, he's in his 70s and he's, you know, he's had a whole career post Poltergeist, right? I would kind of love for him to, I would love to see him come back to the genre.
Do something spooky?
I don't know. Like, you know...
Yeah, but he's an old man Spielberg. Right? He's doing all the shit that he used to watch the kid remaking it. That's
right
all
now,
he's doing.
Yeah. But Scorsese went back to crime.
True.
And, you know, I would like to... Not that Spielberg is known for horror, but I would like to see him take another jab at this. You know,
this
because,
is like a sci-fi
because,
thing.
Dude, like, look, like, so many people... Let's say, for instance, Stranger Things has... adopted, maybe even slightly paid too many homages to Spielberg, you know? And I'm just like, dude, I would love to see for the man himself go back to form and make a suburban spooky story, you know? Have it rated PG-13, I don't care, because Spielberg is super family friendly guy, right? If you're gonna have a PG-13 spooky film, that's fine, but just... I would like.
Is Close Encounters PG or PG-13?
I think it's PG.
PG-13 didn't exist then.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
No, it didn't exist.
It wasn't until his other film, Temple of Doom.
That did it. And or Gremlins, depending on who you ask.
Exactly. Yeah. But also, I think Spielberg is too removed from his suburban. He's like way not suburban anymore. He's like beyond suburban.
Yeah, he's the fucking like 0.5%, dude.
Yeah,
he's
top dog.
I don't think he'd be able to emulate what version of like what this happened in a time when he was still not removed enough to understand and convey suburban attitudes of the time. Now he ain't gonna be able to pull it off.
The way he worked with an independent director for this one, I don't think he's done that for the last 40 years until he did that in The Fablemans with David Lynch. Whoa, was that a spoiler?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Is that a spoiler?
Mm-hmm.
Did I just spoil The Fablemans for you guys?
It's fine. You already spoiled it to me directly. I asked you.
Okay. Wait, did you know about this or not?
No, I missed what you said.
Good.
I just heard...
Don't listen to the recording
just make sure... it's a scene.
Well, I just know that, like, David Lynch is in it.
Okay, well, there
good.
You go.
Good, there you
and
go.
And David Lynch is kind of an independent filmmaker. So, like, you know... He's the independent filmmaker.
He's the weird dude, and we love him for it.
So, like, I haven't seen him collaborate with an independent filmmaker like this, I guess, since Tobe Hooper. Because when I heard that Lynch was in his latest film, I was like, what? Really? And then I was like, holy shit, that was a beautiful ass scene with them. And so I was like, it's nice to see that Spielberg is still collaborating with the culture, I guess you want to say, you know, the culture.
Yeah, he's touching base with it.
You know, I don't think he's lost touch. I don't think he's lost too much touch with his roots or where he come from and stuff like that. Because, dude just collaborated with Lynch.
Yeah, but it is one of those things, too, that where he's not doing to the same scale he's doing like this. He's not on set every day doing the whole thing. Like
back then in the early 80s, I think he was more on his toes than he is now. Now he can do something and keep it on autopilot.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I would say there's definitely a difference between like an older director who's already hit step. Like at this point, it's his movies are a little more fantastical and a little more like, you know, imaginative in a specific way.
But I'm not gonna lie though, I like his fantastical current shit. West Side Story, I'm not a musical guy at all.
Mm-hmm.
West Side Story fucks. I'm gonna say it right now.
I still need to watch it.
I'm gonna say it right now, dude. And then Savannah was hyping it up because she's like, "Look, I like my musicals, and I actually, but I hate West Side Story. But I think your boy Spielberg did really good in this." I'm like, "Really? I gotta check it out and find out for myself." I watch it, and I'm like, "Damn, this is a beautifully shot fucking film. It's well directed. What's her name? Rachel Ziegler. She's really cool." The whole cast, that one dude who's controversial right now is in it. Not Armie Hammer.
Ansel Elgort?
Yeah, that dude. What's he up for right now? Or what's he
What's he up for?
No, he's canceled.
What are the charges?
Yeah, what's he being canceled for these days?
Hold on.
He's apparently he's a creep or something like that?
Could be.
I never even heard of him. I have no idea.
He was in Baby Driver. He was dope in Baby Driver.
Oh, yeah,
that's
pretty good.
But apparently this guy sucks. From what I hear?
Yeah, they're literally the second thing. It's a Vulture website article. It says, Ansel Elgort sexual assault allegations timeline.
Yeah.
Damn.
There you go. But anyways.
We
drifted a little bit here. But Spielberg. Spielberg,
yes.
I would like for him to come back to a horror movie.
Yeah,
it'd be cool.
Let's see how he can do it.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So for time, I'm only gonna ask one of these questions and then do rating.
Good. Yes.
Okay.
I'm curious. Who do you think really directed the movie?
Well, if Spielberg is saying Toby Hooper did it, then Toby Hooper.
You don't think
it.
He was just trying to save face and like, give more credit than he like give more credit than was necessary to Toby Hooper?
I would say
I'm just
being the devil's advocate.
I don't think I've seen or heard of a producer being this hands-on like Spielberg was, because obviously Spielberg, this is a story that he's been working on for years, right?
Yeah.
Before even Toby Hooper was involved in the project,
yeah.
Right? He originally wanted this to be kind of like his sequel to Close Encounters.
Yeah.
So I can see that Spielberg might hold the title of greatest producer of all time just for what he did with Poltergeist. Because of how hands-on... Oh, here's another thing I heard. I heard that it was Spielberg's hands on the face-ripping scene. Apparently that's his hands. They make a cameo. Apparently those are actually Spielberg's...
So not only craft services, he also...
Yeah, he actually volunteered...
Stunt hands.
Yeah, I'll send
stunt
you the
hands.
Video. Apparently those are Spielberg's hands ripping the fucking
That's
face.
That's really cool. I did not know that.
So I'll send you the video. I remember hearing about this like 5 or 6, 7 years ago. But I'll send you the video.
I can't wait to watch it.
There's an actual photo of Spielberg having the dummy, and his hands are literally just ripping the dummy.
Okay.
And the camera's like, and it's Spielberg like holding it. So like,
having a good time there.
So he's literally very hands-on. So yeah. So I gotta say, this is probably the most hands-on producer. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really quite feel like a Spielberg film. Yeah, you got Suburbia in there.
Interesting.
Let me take it back. It feels very heavily like a Spielberg film, but it's still very Toby Hooper-ish. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm like, that's where I think he left his imprints on. And I think I'm just going to go with Toby Hooper.
Yeah.
Toby Hooper directed this. As much as I love Spielberg, was just like, "Yo, dude, I want to be heavily involved, but you go ahead and do what you got to do."
I would agree that Steven Spielberg is probably a heavy-handed producer, and also things that I'm sure Toby didn't always align with Spielberg's vision, and he had the power to say, do it this way.
He did do that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
No. He did veto stuff that Toby Hooper wanted
absolutely.
To do.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly, I'm sure, and that is reflective in the final product. It's absolutely reflective in how the movie plays out. Because to me, it doesn't feel 100% like either. It really doesn't. There is definitely Hooper-isms in there, like for sure. There's scenes of like weird overacting and like groundedness and like the most offbeat parts.
What do you mean,
like,
shaking someone by their collar and being like, they moved the gravestones, but they didn't move the bodies.
But like, that's a very Hooper-ish way of presenting a scene.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think it doesn't have his indie feel. It has a studio feel. Mm-hmm. It feels like a studio movie.
Uh-huh.
And in a very polished Spielberg-y kind of way. So it's Hooper at the end of the day, but it's not Hooper's 100% vision for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. But that's fine, because that's how most movies are nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a situation where at least it wasn't like a Josh Trank fan-forstic situation right
Ooh.
There, you know? It wasn't one of those. It turned out exactly the opposite.
Fan-forstic.
I know, but I think it was that same
you
level
know,
of just...
You want to talk about current films. Spielberg also directed another big franchise. He directed Transformers. And oh, I'm sorry, he produced Transformers.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry. He produced.
Michael Bay would like to have
boy,
a word.
I'm going somewhere with this. He produced Transformers, and my best friend Michael told me, "Hey, dude, Spielberg produced it, but I had full creative control of this."
Meet Michael
tell.
Bay one time, and you never
yeah.
let your friends
yeah.
forget.
No, I'm taking it to the grave with me. I mean, these guys were BFFs. He posted a shirtless photo on his Instagram the other day, and I was like, "Yo, baby, Mikey, what are you doing, dude? you're putting his thirst traps on Instagram now? Okay, dude, all right." And he's like, "Let me lay YOLO." I was like, "What the fuck?" No, but he really did post a shirtless photo on his
Is
Instagram.
Is he recently
like,
single?
Yeah. I have no idea. I was like, "What the fuck you doing, dude?"
True friend, dude. You should
yeah.
know.
I don't know. Look up Michael Bay on Instagram.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like this is a Toby Hooper flick.
Yeah,
sure.
I think so, too. I think it's just a heavy-handed Spielberg production.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
yeah. What do you think, Webster?
I think
She's
that I'm currently
looking
at Michael Bay.
She's like, I think that Steven Spielberg... Oh, my God.
She's looking for the...
Oh,
no,
my God.
For real. Look at this.
There it is.
Did
I like it?
Baby?
Did I like it? If I liked it, it's weird.
No.
Okay.
People are like working hard or hardly working. No, literally, he's holding. Okay, for those at home, I we'll pull it up. But he literally has his hand at like it's like this, and
he's
like,
in a thirst trap. Trust, I've done those myself.
Wow.
So check out this transformation
yeah.
right here.
You fucking
you
slut.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, when I met him, you know, we hang out every weekend.
Sure,
but,
you golf.
You know,
yeah,
we're BFFs, and he told me he's like, yeah, dude, Spielberg totally was the producer, but he let me do my thing. I'm like, all right, cool. I believe it.
I think they should have been co-directors.
That would have been cool.
I think that I think it's unfair because I agree with everything you guys have said that Spielberg was, I think, almost too hands-on as a producer on this. But I think it would have been better if they had approached it as co-directors, but obviously they couldn't for logistical reasons.
Yeah, DJ's kind of some shit back in the early
right.
80s for sure.
But, that being said, this movie, to me personally, feels more Spielberg-y than a Toby Hooper movie, for me personally.
Okay.
Like, I would say, even though the majority of this movie takes place during the day, like, the daylight feels like Spielberg. The night feels like Toby Hooper.
Ooh, very well put. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like if somebody said, oh, Spielberg directed this, I'm like, oh, yes, that's Spielberg directed this. But then, like, if somebody said, oh, Toby Hooper directed this, I'm like, Toby Hooper directed this? Like,
so
that's where my mind would go.
In my head, watching this movie, or, like, even when I was a kid, like, in my head, for some reason, I always thought that Spielberg, like, directed this movie.
I always thought that, too.
I didn't know
kid,
until
yeah.
I started, until, I, like, way, way, way later in my adult life that I was just like, oh, fuck, Toby Hooper directed this. That's fucking awesome. But, like, in my head, I always thought it was Spielberg.
Mm.
So, I don't know. I think they could have, I'm leaning more towards, I feel like Spielberg probably had a little bit too much of his hands in the cookie jar when it came to directing.
Okay.
And I think he might have overstepped the line of being a producer, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with necessarily. I think it was really honorable of him to like metaphorically fall on his sword
yeah.
to give Toby Hooper that like directing credit. But like this was a collaborative project. Like if you look at Toby Hooper's like the rest of his like directing credits, nothing's fucking Poltergeist.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah, I don't think he was built for the studio system. So
no.
Mm.
And Spielberg was like, ah, shit, okay, well, do it like this, do this.
Yeah.
I'm looking for this photo of Spielberg having the mannequin over his head and ripping it. Ah, here we go. There it is. So.
Pull that up.
All right. Apparently, that is Spielberg right there.
Oh, okay.
Holding the mannequin over his face, and he's actually, like, Tobe Hooper is directing him on, like, where, like, the face is positioned.
That's gotta be fun as hell.
Yeah, where to position his face. That's a young-ass Spielberg right there.
Movie making seems
and
cool.
And he's, yeah, you know, for those folks watching on video,
we'll post it up in post.
Yeah, we'll be good. We can edit
yeah,
it in the picture.
But
we're
that's
fine.
Spielberg right there. Ripping the face right there. So,
I love that.
Nice. Yeah, nice.
All right, guys, we have to wrap this shit up. Rate this movie out of 5. 5 being, they moved the gravestones, but they didn't move the bodies.
Wow.
I mean, this is a comfort film for sure. I can comfortably watch this, probably even pass out to it and stuff like that. It's one of those films I have no, like, if it's on TV, I'm going to sit down and watch it. But at the same time, I can have it on the background as I'm folding clothes, and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's a great background movie.
Yeah, it really is a background movie. It's a great one. But it's also a movie that's going to get my attention weirdly at the same time. I'm going to go with 4.
4? Solid 4?
0.25.
Ooh!
Yes,
hey.
4.25 out of 5.
Quarter on that.
Yeah, I really love this movie. Yeah, this movie's awesome.
Yeah, fun.
I'm gonna give it a 3.75.
3.75.
I think nostalgia still carries it a lot for me.
Yeah.
I would say it's actually very, very good. But I mean, if it was a 4, I probably would have watched it a lot more over the years compared to like now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think it's definitely like Phil said, it's very, very comfort. And very, very good. That's not a bad rating at all. It's really, really good. I don't know if it's great. I'm not 100% certain on it. I just think it's pretty goddamn good. So that's where I'm at.
There are certain scenes where I'm like, okay, we could have done without this. Like the creepy gardeners that were trying
to
hit
up. Or the random cutscene.
Yeah, that too. That's why I'm just like...
There's some shakiness to it that stops him from being a 4.
There's
for me.
Something there that's like preventing me to go with like all 5, you know?
Mm-hmm. But there's a love there for this movie that I have for sure.
Yeah, for me, I really have a big love for this one. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
I'm going to split the difference and give it a 4.
Hey, all right. There you go.
Nice.
No, this movie is... incredible. I loved watching it even like as a young adult. I love watching it now. I think the thing that's stopping me from putting it on just as like background noise or just like randomly putting it on, like how you were talking about, Flynn, is it. I feel like it almost does require my undivided attention. Like once I started, I kind of am just like, all right, well, I'm stuck here for the next hour and a half. Like,
yeah, that makes sense. I mean,
I don't know. And maybe like. Maybe, I don't know, because, like, I also feel like it's been so immersed into, like, horror lexicon that I think people kind of take it for granted a little.
That's a good point. Because
it's
agree.
Like, how many times do you rewatch The Exorcist during
That's
the year?
That's a very, very, very good point. Yes, I can agree with that.
So, I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay. Yeah, it is iconography at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, it really, really
for
is.
For sure.
Yes.
All right, guys, let's wrap it up. Let's see. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. That was Poltergeist from 1982. If you like what you heard, please make sure you are following us on all of our social media platforms. We post updates. Videos like this are going to probably be up there as well. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. You can also find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo. And then also, we would take it as a huge kindness, a great way to kick off season 6, if you can make sure you're subscribed on any of your podcasting platforms. I know Stitcher just died, sorry.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Stitcher.
Wasn't our fault.
And make sure, if you could give us a 5-star rating, that'll also help other people find this podcast just like you. So thank you so much for doing that. We love and appreciate you so much. We're super excited to have a video element. I feel very weird talking to a camera right now, but that's fine. In the meantime, next week, Phil gave the hint, but we're going to go ahead and give it again. You ready, Phil? 1, 2, 3.
Six,
Mortal
six.
Kombat!
Wow. We're just going to name the movie? I thought it was going to be a hint.
No. It's fine.
Mortal Kombat!
The greatest techno song of all time.
We yell a lot in that episode.
Oh, yeah. We're loud.
It's a delight. We have the boys from the NPC Gaming Podcast joining us.
Podcast, baby.
Which does remind me, if you want to stay up to date on all of the podcasts that we offer here at the Horrible People's Network,
bam.
You can follow our Instagram at Horrible People's Network, which is HORRORBLE People's Network. We have so many cool podcasts to offer you, and we have even more coming up this year. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, make sure you guys move the bodies.
Yeah, or don't, and just deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
It's totally possible. So
either way.
That's America,
they're
baby.
They're here.